Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. Burnaby is located on the ancestral and stolen homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples.
You can listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store, depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree/cjsfradio and learn more by visiting our website, cjsf.ca. Welcome, everybody. This is Slumber Party, and I'm DJ Coco.
And I am DJ Star. Thank you for joining us today on this very dreary Tuesday. We will be talking about a slightly dreary topic as well, which will come later. But to preface, we will be talking about lobotomies.
Light work.
A little light topic. Yeah, exactly. No big deal. It's kind of funny because it relates to our last topics about Riot Girl in a way, as very opposite ends of the spectrum, like lobotomized women versus Riot Girls are like
kind of combining slightly.
Yeah, they're exact opposites.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I think we're just gonna hop right into the music with Star Power by Shower Curtain.
Hope you enjoy. We'll be right back.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
Thank you.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, and you are tuning in to Slumber Party. My name is DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Kogo. Sorry, didn't respond, but...
We are back, and we are here to talk. But first, I will tell you about those songs. Do not worry. The song that you just heard was Que Fabe by Fiveles Glaque. And the album name is Wrong Weakness. I'm not sure where they're from, but definitely does not sound like English. But that was a bit of experimental jazz. And then before that was Greedy by Lovechild.
Pretty good, but...
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Now it's time to get into it. The lobotomy.
The big topic. Yeah, this was DJ Star's idea. Not sure where this came from.
I hear this a lot on social media, just talking about lobotomies. You're like, oh, if I was existing in the 50s, I would get lobotomized. And I kind of had some sort of sense of what it was, but I wanted to like dig in to the history, exactly what happened, what were the social factors, what were the economic factors that led to this, and exactly what was it I was curious about. So maybe you out there listening want to know about lobotomies, and that's why we're here today.
Oh yeah, I had some fun researching this. It was pretty interesting, a lot of history, especially with women and a lot of lobotomies. But first, we'll just get into the general kind of definition if you don't know what a lobotomy is. So,
okay, yeah. So the first invention of the lobotomy was a frontal lobotomy, which it sounds pretty gruesome, but it is drilling holes into each side of someone's skull and then cutting through their brain tissue, like specifically the frontal lobe, which is very largely responsible for personality, and then severing neural connections between the frontal lobe and the thalamus.
It sounds so disgusting. Yep. I was researching and I was eating something and I decided to watch a video of someone getting a lobotomy.
No.
Safe to say, did not finish my meal after that. But yeah, they did these mostly for patients suffering from mental illness. So these were severe cases of disorders like schizophrenia, people suffering from mania,
or severe depression.
Depression, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this, I think the initial idea came about in around the 1800s, but then it started becoming more popularized in the 30s and 40s. When there was also the transorbital lobotomy, which was like a more developed idea of the lobotomy.
This one's even grosser.
Yeah, so this kind of brings you back to like Egyptian kind of things, where it's like inserting, I guess they go through the nose, but this one is inserting a surgical instrument called a leucotome. And it looks like, I looked up a photo, it kind of looks like a pair of scissors and also like an ice pick. And they go through the eye socket to access the brain. Easy access.
How does the eye not get damaged in
any
way?
So many questions, yeah.
Yeah. I looked this up a little bit and they call this like informally the ice pick lobotomy because of what it does. And it was popularized by this one guy. His name is Walter Freeman. And so he conducted the actual first lobotomy in 1936. And he did these ice pick lobotomies all across the USA. So he essentially went on kind of a tour. And it was like some weird psychiatric tour where he went to a bunch of these. He went to 55 psychiatric hospitals.
It's like a circus.
Yeah, it's like a little circus for his patients. Mm-hmm. And he performed these surgeries and then also taught the ice pick method to other surgeons.
Yeah, spreading the word.
Yeah, but it was interesting because he noted that he no longer needed a drill or other patients or even scrubs to wear while doing these surgeries.
Yes,
which is,
it's too easy. It seems
a little unsafe, but
And also I said the frontal lobe before was associated with personality, but it's also associated with behavior, emotion, and problem solving skills. And people, like, they're just going in there cutting out parts of the frontal lobe, just like, okay, we're gonna sever this connection. And they did it to reduce abnormal stimuli that could cause impulsive or violent behavior. But yeah, definitely had some different side effects than just that.
Yeah. So, yeah, they ended up doing those things to sever the connections. And so some of the symptoms, we can get into that, is that definitely the patients, they had a lot of their responsiveness, self-awareness, spontaneity reduced, but mostly they were really emotionally dulled, and even their intellect was restricted after these lobotomies.
Mm-hmm. And I was reading just some quotes from surgeons that had performed lobotomies in the 40s-ish, and they were reporting patients being more comfortable, and I was kind of like, who are they more, like, are the patients more comfortable? Are they more comfortable for others around them? But they're like, oh, yeah, but they lose some of their sparkle. Like, verbatim, some of their sparkle.
Jeez.
So that's, you know, nobody wants to lose their sparkle.
Yeah.
They said, like, it was also supposed to alleviate their symptoms of insomnia, nervous tension, apprehension, anxiety, which seems like these types of symptoms, especially apprehension, like, is that even a symptom?
Yeah, no.
Like, you're just kind of, you know, not sure about something, and we're going in. Yeah, we're going in with an ice pick, cutting out parts of the brain. That, it just does not line up to me.
Yeah.
At all, how invasive the surgery is for how, like, potentially minor some of the symptoms are for patients.
Mm-hmm. I feel like they had the right idea of not mm-hmm. like, I know that the symptoms are bad,
guys,
and that
guys,
the results,
but guys, were not that bad,
guys, because I guess, like, seeing how they can incorporate biology into fixing a psychological problem could be the right steps to wanting to try to fix mental illness, like, in a way. Like, I feel like their intentions were good to try to solve mental illness, even though it turned out pretty drastic and dulling all the emotions of the patient. I guess they definitely didn't mean to, but it is pretty crazy that we went through this time period of medicine history, and it's actually quoted as one of the greatest mistakes of medicine history.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I think people back then also totally misunderstood mental health, because they're taking it so literally, like, mm-hmm. oh, there's something going wrong in the brain, like, let's just get in there physically and take this issue out, when that is, we know that's not the right way to do it now.
Yeah, this was definitely at a time period, the lobotomies, when they had a lot of psychiatric asylums, and so this was at the point before psychiatric drugs, before therapy, we knew about all of this, and so they would just basically take anyone who got referred and had maybe a crazy incident or something, and they just throw them into an asylum where it was now overcrowded, understaffed, underfunded. So then when they found that, maybe we can do a quick fix and get them out the asylums with this surgery, it got pretty popularized.
Mm.
But then, after specifically the 1950s was when the first antipsychotic drug was created, called chlorpromazine. And this was used for treating schizophrenia. This was kind of the downfall of lobotomies, which is good. It's a great thing that we had a downfall for it, because it wasn't really too helpful. But yeah, it was at a time where we started understanding how the conditions were in these asylums, the actual effects of lobotomies, and then just trying to get all these psychiatric patients back into the community and away from these horrid conditions. So that's a little bit about the time period, though.
And something to quickly note that I just think is a staggering fact, and I did not know this before, but the original developer of the lobotomy, who did a lot of work pioneering the surgery, his name was Antonio Egas Moniz. He actually won the Nobel Prize for that work. Not like a different type of work, but he won it for lobotomies, like his work in lobotomies.
Wow.
And that is just insane to me, that it was recognized at such a high level when it was also regarded as one of the greatest mistakes ever.
Yeah, looking back now, it does seem crazy. But at the time, I feel like to create an operation on that scale, to that essentially fix mental illness, could have seemed pretty monumental at the time.
But the thing is, a lot of the symptoms, especially for women, weren't even super consistent with mental illness.
Right.
And I think this connects to a long history of women being seen as more predisposed to behavioral or mental issues. And we can get into that. But I think a lot of the symptoms were not, like I said, apprehension, anxiety, like that. I mean, some of it can be mental illness, but I also feel like a lot of it was just male doctors wanting to kind of control a woman's sparkle.
Yeah, there's a whole tie with mental illness as a whole with women. We touched in a bit for our research about hysteria.
Yeah, so this hysteria has been like around, this idea of hysteria has been around for so long, like over 3,000 years ago in a bunch of different cultures.
Oh yeah, there's been like ancient Egyptians and the philosopher Hippocrates, they said they identified hysterical cause in spontaneous uterus movement in the female body. I'm like, how do you measure spontaneous uterus movement?
But they don't. It's, yeah, you it can. Sounds completely made up.
So that seems ridiculous, first of all. But
yeah, it was the first mental disorder like associated with women, I think. And hysteria literally means uterus. It comes from the Greek word hysteria, which means uterus.
Jeez, yeah.
So okay. Like, you got a problem, you have a uterus. Let's just call it that, okay?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Oh, and as well, Sigmund Freud, one of the most well-known psychologists, he also considered hysteria an almost exclusively female disease, and that's someone who a lot of people followed his research. So definitely has a lot of ties with mental illness as well.
Yeah, because that has been building and building over thousands of years. It also became really popular in the 18th century with women just being diagnosed with hysteria left and right. And a lot of those things were like, I don't know, not really wanting to do anything intimate with their husband, or like getting angry, having symptoms of PTSD.
Yeah.
Like those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's like if you're in the 20th century and your wife starts having an emotional breakdown or something, like, and since women basically had no rights at that time, the husband or her father or her brother could basically just go talk to the doctor about the signs of mental illness and hysteria, and then take her in for a lobotomy, and then now she's compliant and passive.
So that's the goal. Because also something that's crazy when I was reading about hysteria is that there was an actual case where one of the woman's symptoms was a fondness of writing.
I laughed when I saw
like,
this.
Oh my god, she has hobbies. Like, she's hysterical. This is insane. Yeah, so
yeah, and as well to tie this in with the lobotomies, there's this one stat that I thought was pretty interesting, is that women were lobotomized more than men. There was survey from 1949 to 1951 that tracked the amount of procedures, and it found that 60% of lobotomized patients were women. And even though men outnumber women in almost all psychiatric institutions, so there's definitely something a little fishy going on that can't just be tracked equally.
For sure. Like, male doctors were recorded saying that men are rarely hysterical. And for the cure for hysteria, it was pretty much bed rest with no physical or mental activity whatsoever. So it's like, just stay there and get really bored. It will fix you. Don't worry.
But then we'll just lobotomize the woman.
And one like other crazy fact that I just wanted to say, and it kind of ties into lobotomies, I'm still talking about hysteria, but a Canadian psychiatrist, his name is Richard Maurice Buck. So he was active in the 19th century. He was actually a big advocate for removing the uterus completely to cure female patients of mental illness, which kind of can tie into lobotomies because they are removing parts of the brain of majority female patients to cure them of mental illness. But I think it's just taking away their humanity.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, for that psychiatrist, there was a lot of controversy. I think he was like thrown out of whatever medical association he was a part of. But, you know, there is still that kind of rhetoric and ideology that preluded lobotomies, which is scary to think about. For sure.
I think they probably would have gave me a lobotomy if I was born a little earlier. But
I think a lot of women nowadays, like the point that we're at, where you know, it's okay to have an opinion.
Yeah.
That is pretty much like, okay.
Yeah, because even we have the, it's called the hysterical woman trope that's still played in media. You still
for
hear.
For sure, yeah. I mean, we're talking about this like it was in the past, but this these things still carry happening. Over too.
Yeah, because people say, oh, like, oh, she's crazy. Mm-hmm. All the time, I've heard so many times, even with popular celebrities too. I know that kind of off topic, but Taylor Swift, whenever she writes a song about guys or breakups, everyone's like, oh, she's crazy and she's always talking about her exes and everything. But then if a guy writes a song about his ex, no one says anything about him being crazy or obsessive or anything like that.
Yeah, it's just another way to discredit women's emotions that are too strong or considered too strong or too irrational when we can't actually confront, like, why are they feeling this way? Why are they having this reaction? It's easier for men or for other people just to write it off as like, oh, she's being hysterical.
Right.
Which is unfortunate. And yeah, a little more about lobotomies is that, you know, the social ideas of that time, we know, like 1950s, come on, that's like the peak of the nuclear family and, you know, having stay-at-home wife and breadwinner husband. So women were expected to be very submissive and cooperative to all of the husband's like political and economic desires while they just kind of maintained the house and were already doing things or were already expected to be doing things that didn't actually require a lot of, how do I say this, like personality or intellect? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like much more menial tasks. And also, like, lobotomies were not just used on women. They were also performed on African Americans, and with this whole idea of back to the, like, cutting these nerve endings to make people react less aggressively or like that. They were using that same idea to be like, oh, yeah, let's make them less dangerous, less aggressive, which, yeah, is already racist.
Yeah. And regardless of their gender, it was both men and African men and women.
And I saw that they actually, like, lobotomies and other brain operations were actually performed on Black children as young as 6 years old.
Wow.
So that goes even, like, I don't think women, like, white women were performed, like, lobotomies were performed on them that young, but that is just horrible.
Yeah, 6 years old, your brain's still developing, and they're just snipping everything out
there. And how is a six-year-old dangerous?
Yeah.
Like, also, and yeah, I think they did it with gay people as well, so it was definitely a way to control for sure.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, it kind of, it's interesting because the whole idea of lobotomies kind of reflects like maintaining certain social norms, because if you see women or like anyone else who's kind of deviating from these social norms, you're like, maybe there's something psychologically wrong with this person.
Yeah. So let's fix them up and then put them back. Yeah, definitely with the whole trying to make them more compliant, and then husbands reporting. And back to the lobotomies, there's also, they had like a period where they believed the lobotomies were successful because of husbands self-reporting that their wives were quote-unquote more normal than ever and wanted to do house chores now, which now is equal to normal. And they also had pictures of before and after shots, which was they deemed as medical evidence that the patients were not smiling before in the before picture, and then they were smiling in the after picture, which meant that there was success. So there's things like that, which, how did we measure that to be successful?
That was, just a note, that was like a typical way of, like, it was kind of accepted at that time. Like, before and after photos were kind of like a way to show that there was an effect. But the fact that it was woman before and after smiling is like the thing. I feel like it kind of connects to even today a little bit, you know, when like you're on the street and men are like, smile, sweetie, or something, you know, it's like trying to, you know, appease others instead of like, oh, are you actually like, are, because I don't think people who receive lobotomies were fulfilled or happy. Like, I think it took away all of their intelligence, like their drive to do things, and just super docile and moldable and pliable to kind of be in a life of servitude to you, which is, you know,
What I wanted to research more into, I couldn't really find anything, but like specific personal stories of people with lobotomies to see if they actually enjoy being more dulled out, because maybe it mostly just matters what they think, really, because it was.
But also, if you have a lobotomy, like if you do a post in like a post lobotomy interview, how critically are they going to be thinking happened to them? I'm thinking there's probably like accounts of like family members who saw it happen and saw the changes in the person, and maybe they were happy. I don't know, but I just think that even if they turned out to be happy, it is still something that is so wrong and should not have been done to them in the first place when someone's suffering from mental illness at all.
Yeah, to have your intellect restricted that much. But then again, schizophrenia is also a terrible, terrible disorder. I'm not sure if personally if I wanted to see hallucinations and think scary thoughts all the time or just be emotionally dull. I think that's a tough decision. I mean, I'm
would
glad
you rather.
Would you rather, like the most doomed would you rather ever, but I don't know personally, but I'm glad I don't have to make that decision. So
yeah, I think with the way that medicine is developing right now, there's no need to really get a lobotomy anymore for schizophrenia, but it's also something, where it's like some mental illnesses can't really have a quick fix. Like, and we, like, it sounds like a fix, but I think it also makes aspects of a person's life worse. And the, like, it's a trade off, but I don't really know if it's, I don't think it's a good one.
Yeah. I feel like in the future now, though, they're probably definitely looking back into not the particular ice pick lobotomies, but definitely looking more into the brain and seeing more specific parts than just like stabbing one part of the frontal lobe, you know?
Yeah.
But I feel like in the future, there will definitely be some form of lobotomies that are more sophisticated that will try to cure mental illness once
again. Yeah.
That's my prediction.
It's possible. Sure. And this whole conversation just made me think, like, so what social norms are being maintained by psychiatry, psychology, and medicine now? Because it's so easy to look back at the past, see where they went wrong, and to criticize it. And it should be criticized for sure.
Right.
But we can't assume that. I mean, we know that our system right now is not perfect. It's actually pretty bad. It's like, there's a lot of issues with the medical system. We've talked about it before, and I think we'll talk about it in the future too. But I don't have an answer for the question, but for you there listening to, like, what social norms are still being maintained?
Yeah. I feel like drugs, things like antidepressants, I feel like we'll look back at those and we might have some problems with it.
Why?
I think personally because I know a person who took antidepressants and antipsychotics and things, and she said that she just felt, she felt a little dulled out, but she didn't feel better whatsoever.
That's
because,
true.
Yeah, because, I mean, therapy and drugs can only take you so far, because how much more of life can you enjoy from that, from just trying to suppress?
I think just taking the drug is not, like, the full solution. But it is true that, like, the way that we, our system is structured, is that we are, like, giving out these fixes, like these pills, these medications that have a bunch of really horrible side effects, and we're not really looking at it in a more holistic way. And yeah, therapy is good, but I feel like there's other ways, like physical health as well, to look at mental health. But
yeah, it's all just about trying to maintain it, which is unfortunate, but that's, I mean, that's the best we can try to do than just letting the problem settle.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, I think that's a little wrap up on our
that's what we got
lobotomy.
For the day.
Yeah, quite an interesting topic. Definitely would want to research more a little about this.
Yeah, definitely looking at the case studies would be really interesting, I think.
But yeah, we are going to continue with the music today. The next one is from DJ Star. So this is going to be Bug House by Mama. Pretty good one. So take a listen.
Take a listen.
Greetings, netizens. Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for Bitcoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.
To tell you what time
I'm not like anybody. You gotta deserve me. I know you can't.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM. You're tuning into Slumber Party. My name is DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco. The last one you just heard was from Charlie XCX's new album. This is 365 featuring Shy Girl. Pretty
so good.
We had some technical difficulties.
Sorry about that.
Beginning, the Wi-Fi cut out for a couple seconds, so there's a little bit of buffering.
Yeah, we were happening. Trying to play a little piano and some like club music at the same time.
Yeah.
We know which one won over, obviously.
So, sorry about that. But anyways, this is pretty much the top of the hour we're getting to here. So that is pretty much the end of us for this week for Slumber Party. But thank you so much for tuning in. We had a lot of fun this episode. And we'll be back next week for 6 to 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Up next is Revolution Rock at 7 p.m. And then at 8 p.m. we have Bitcoover with our music coordinator, Connor. So stick around for that.
For sure. And next song, you heard a little bit of it before, but just a bit, so we're going to play it. It is DJ Coco's song.
Yeah, it's a bit of an experimental jazz song. Her name is Nala Nefro, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she's Belgian, and she's played some interesting instruments. She plays the pedal harp, the modular synthesizer, and the piano. So
I don't know what those first two things
are. I know.
Are.
I don't really know either. I had to look those up, but I think they're a little bit incorporated into the song, so you'll hear that in a second. But yeah, thank you so much, and see you next week.
Bye! Thank you. listening. See you guys next week, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
Thing is...